Stop rustling papers.
You can rustle away. Rustle away. Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 15 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. I'm Tom and I'm your host. Rejoining us this week is Dan Kilpatrick. Nice of you to join us, mate.
Thank you, mate.
How was France?
Monaco.
How was Monaco?
It was all right. There was a couple of shockers and obviously the football wasn't great.
What, did you go to the casino?
I didn't go to the casino. I missed my flight, which I blame entirely on EasyJet. And I had a grand plan to win back all the money I'd spent on the flight, because I obviously can't expense three flights. So I thought, I'm going to win back all the money in the casino, but I didn't go in the end. So
it's a shame.
Just can't buy a new phone.
Fair enough. To join us this week, we are reuniting an old pair from last season. After last season's Chelsea draw, it's Rich Arrowsmith, returning Rich Arrowsmith. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, all right, thank you. And Liam Toomey from ESPN. Thank you again for joining us, Liam. You are the only non-Spurs fan that's ever been on this podcast. And I think you probably will be the only one going forward as well. We've got this weird thing where we just like to discuss our awful record at Chelsea with, you know, a proper Chelsea fan and correspondent. So
I've always considered myself a pioneer, so
yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, of course, we are here to talk about the Chelsea game, which neither of you went to, I understand.
No. Bumped.
You got bumped again, Dan, because that's the Emirates and Stamford Bridge now. So who did you get bumped for?
Well,
not Delaney again. Don't tell me it was
not Delaney
again.
Thank God. ESPN sent Mark Ogden, who's the new senior football writer. Is that right?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
That's the official title, yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations, of course. Congratulations to Mark Ogden, of course, but he's ousting the, you know, the banter
boys. We're not going to mug off a senior
colleague. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that, you know, you're getting bumped now, so...
I didn't go to Stamford Bridge last season, so we can't blame Mark.
Yeah, no, it's usually fair. The home correspondent that gets the second pass. So when it's Tottenham Chelsea in January, I'm sure Dan will be, he'll take priority.
So why didn't
over
you
me
go?
Anyway, because we've had this situation once before this season for the Manchester United game as well, where the press box is exceptionally busy. Several media organisations had their allocations cut back, and ours was cut back to one. So
gutting.
Yeah,
cutbacks at Chelsea, exclusive. We will talk about the Chelsea game, but we should talk about the Monaco game first, sadly, because chronologically it came first. Dan, how was it? Monaco doesn't strike me as the sort of place that is really particularly interesting to go and watch football, is it?
I quite liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I liked it.
What about it did you like?
Is it the running track?
Are we talking about the stadium itself, or the actual
everything
Monaco, the place,
everything?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, missing the flight was horrendous. I had to then trek from Gatwick to Heathrow in rush hour, in morning rush hour, and my thought was just London's too fucking busy. There are too many people in London. That's my new hot take.
Yeah,
a lot of people need to leave London. that is what I think. So getting to Monaco is off season. There's just no one there. There is literally no one there. It's really quiet. You can go into any restaurant or bar, and obviously there were Spurs fans about, but apart from that, it was really quiet. So I was like, this is a nice change of pace, actually. So I quite enjoyed it, and it's got weird, like, shiny, glistening streets and a few massive boats.
I've heard that they have just ridiculous cars just parked on the pavement rather than in...
Yeah,
like car parks. Or
yeah, anything. And there are quite a few like ridiculous Ferrari and Lamborghini garages dotted around, which I feel like the amount of luxury car garages per square mile must be higher than anywhere else in the world.
That is an interesting fact.
Yeah,
interesting.
There
fact.
You go. How many Spurs? Barry Partridge.
How many Spurs fans went? Was it like five? It was under
900.
1,000, wasn't it? All right. Okay. That's And I think Adam
was saying.
That's
probably about the same as the amount of local people actually in Monaco.
And about nine times the amount that they brought to Wembley as well, I think. But so the news came out about Vertonghen and Walker being rested, Eriksen maybe erring on the side of dropped rather than rested. Did you get any sense from the fans Were you around the fans when that news came out, or had you already made your way to the stadium?
I was in the stadium when the team news came
out. What was the reaction like amongst your peers then in the stadium?
Well, a running theme of the last 2 months at Tottenham, almost since the City game, has been in the press box beforehand, no one really knows what formation he's going to play and what team he's going to play. And for the first few weeks, I thought, oh, this is a good thing. It means Spurs have options, and it means there's a plan B, and it means we're not predictable, etc. And after a while, you start to realise, actually, this isn't a particularly good thing, because it means no one really knows what's going on. And does Pochettino know his best team? Does he know his best formation? And it was similar beforehand at Monaco. No one was really sure what he was going to go for, but pretty much no one called the best defender being left out. Walker was easier to predict because he'd missed both Champions League away games, but I think the Walker call was kind of exacerbated by the fact that Vertonghen wasn't in there as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because then suddenly it's three of your four best defenders aren't in the team, with only one of them being injured.
Rich, what was your reaction?
Yeah, similar. I think when I saw the team, I was like, okay, it's a bit different. And then a feeling of we could probably still do this with that team sort of came over me. How wrong I was. At the time, I was like, yeah, we might be able to still do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I still bet on Monaco to win, but...
So he's got something out of it, at least. Yeah.
Hedging.
Liam, did you manage to catch the game?
I did, yeah. Well, I didn't see it live, but I caught most of it afterwards.
I think the overriding feeling was that... I think, Rich, I was on board with you that I thought we could have done it. I thought we were still maybe had enough quality. I thought Trippier had shown glimpses of being a capable right back in Europe, particularly away from home. He's played in Leverkusen and Moscow, and I thought he was okay. But I think it was pretty obvious from about 10 minutes in that we just weren't in any way up for it.
Also, Monaco are the best team in our group.
They were really good.
I'm now completely convinced of that. I think they're going to give anyone a game this year.
They're flying.
Depending on their draw, depending who they get, presuming they top the group, which they're almost certain
they
to do.
They have.
They could. Yeah, they'll give anyone a game.
Well, there are lots of teams finishing second this year.
It's going to be a really interesting draw. That last 16.
Like buying a second, I think.
Like, on the flight back, I just had a chat with some Spurs fans, and there were some good points. One of them made the point, which I quite liked. He said, can you remember the last time any team in the European Cup, so going back to whenever the 60s when it started, rested players for a must-win game in the European Cup? And the only example I could think of was Liverpool against Real Madrid. But then that was a game where they knew Real Madrid were going to top the group. And so they kind of wrote that game off and were concentrating on the other two, if I remember rightly.
Well, they also had Chelsea the following
week. Yeah, and they did have a big game. But it doesn't really happen, does it?
No.
You could probably list the examples on one hand of teams that needed to win a game and drop two players in the biggest European competition.
From a neutral or fairly neutral standpoint, Liam, what's behind a decision like that then? Is it just we've got Chelsea at the weekend, or is there something a little... Does he genuinely just trust that all of the players he's got after, what is it now, this is his third season at the club? So just over 2 years worth of working with the players and stuff. Is it just blind confidence, do you think?
Well, I think, look at the form now after the Chelsea game. I think Spurs have won 1 in 10, haven't they?
So, 2 in 10.
2 in 10, isn't it?
No, it's 1 in 10.
I think it's 1 in 10 after the Chelsea game. But but I think with recent form like that, if you ask Pochettino, he'd probably come back with you saying that none of those players have done enough to justify automatic inclusion for what would be deemed the big game of the week. And it's a tough week because you've got yourself into a do or die situation in the Champions League, and then you've got a team that's absolutely flying and you're big London rivals the following weekend. So it's not an enviable situation, but I think the defensive players that he rested probably also a little bit of a sign that maybe slightly underestimated what Monaco have been doing, because I think I saw somewhere today they're averaging more goals per game than any other team in Europe right now.
I think
they're
like
a really dangerous team.
40-odd in 13 games.
Yeah, they're
really
dangerous team.
They were averaging exactly 3 goals a game before our game.
And their top scorer's only got 5.
Yeah, and he's a right back.
So they're basically everyone on their team scoring goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're flying as well. And I just get the more general sense with Pochettino right now that he's just kind of searching. He had a really settled team last year that maybe was a little bit too settled because they kind of ran out of steam physically towards the end. And he's tried to mix it up this year with lineups and squad rotation, and maybe it's resulted in the first 11 not quite functioning and the no one quite functioning at maximum capacity.
Just a quick word on something Pochettino said in the pre-Chelsea press conference. He was asked about Vertonghen and Walker, and he said something along the lines of, you mean the media, don't have all the information. Sometimes I make a decision for reasons I can't explain. And that could just be a slightly arrogant sort of, you don't, you know, have all the science in front of you, you don't know who's tired, or it could have been a ever so subtle hint towards something having happened. I don't know.
You're not looking at the whole part.
Yeah, the whole part. You know, Vertonghen and Walker both more or less, well, Vertonghen said afterwards he was fit, and Walker kind of grunted when he was asked. But, you know, maybe one of them had a knock, maybe one of them was out late, maybe, you know, there are a million things that could have happened that we'll never see the light of day. We just won't know about them.
I think as well, if you look at the way we lined up against Chelsea, it was much more of a traditional, or what we did last season, I think, and therefore the fullbacks were going to be quite important. And I just think he had the idea of playing Walker and Vertonghen at those fullbacks that do cover a lot of ground, and maybe they just needed to be as fresh as possible.
But then he didn't play Vertonghen left back.
What, against Chelsea?
He played Wimmer.
Yeah.
See, I missed the game. I just caught highlights and we were battered by it, so I didn't really see that much.
Which shows, take one game at a time. Don't think two games ahead, because Wimmer and Dier were so bad against Monaco. If I agree with you, I think he probably was thinking about Vertonghen left back, but then he must have thought, shit, I can't do that against Costa, Pedro, and Hazard.
I thought I'd made a really good point there.
No, apologise.
Many apologies, yeah. Completely deserved to be mugged off there. Rich, what do you think about the overall situation? Because it's starting to get, say, 1-10, starting to feel a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those fans who will defend and try and be positive and try and see the good side of things. Like I've seen some crazy comments, put it that way, about the whole situation at Spurs and players should go, and some even saying more than that. And I'm just.
Twitter is famously patient.
Well, exactly. Maybe I'm getting a bad sample, but I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as people are making out. I think we've got key players injured. We've had every game recently feels like it's been a massive game, like a must-win game. We could do with 3 or 4 poles at home and just rattle off a few 2-0 wins.
But do you feel like the fact is we've got Hull at home, Swansea at home, Burnley at home before Christmas. Mm. This run of form makes those games a lot bigger now. And despite, you know, if we can't get through that without 9 points, it's going to be considered a bit of a failure, all things considered.
Yeah, you see, I've that much confidence in the squad, but I don't see that being an issue. I think we could play anyone from our squad and we will have enough to beat all of those teams. I can't see, I've jinxed this probably now.
But, can't wait for this to be replayed about 3 weeks.
I can't see us not winning all of those games you just mentioned.
Dan, do you think that this run of form is going to give them a shot in the arm, or is it going to work the other way?
I don't think bad form generally gives anyone a shot in the arm. As in, it would have lowered confidence, I think, and...
But we've reacted to spells like this before, haven't we?
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point. I think actually getting beaten at Chelsea might not be the worst thing in the world. Had we ground out another draw there, it could be presented in the same way that the Arsenal draw was presented as a very positive thing. Whereas actually the thing about the Arsenal game, if you think back, was when Spurs drew twice with Arsenal last year. I think there was a real feeling of, oh, both those games we should have won. It was a bit disappointing. And some people were saying that after the draw at Arsenal a few weeks ago, but actually it was more of a, you know, Spurs were on bad form. They kind of got away with it there. Mm-hmm. And that's quite an important kind of shift in, I don't know, rhetoric. And maybe if we'd have got a point at Chelsea, it would have been, oh, you know, everything's okay. Whereas actually, everything's not okay, I think. And I do think, as Liam says, Pochettino probably needs to go back to basics a little bit and start picking the players in the positions that they played last season when everything was working really well.
Mm.
And then if you think back to the first defeat of a long unbeaten run last season was Newcastle, where Spurs were just terrible. We went to that game and nearly cried afterwards. And actually, I think Spurs responded with 5 wins in a row, six in a row.
Yeah,
so
we were excellent.
Maybe getting beaten will be the shot in the arm. I can see what you mean, actually. But I think confidence is pretty low at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm quite weirdly optimistic. I think this was a horrible run, and not just in the league, but to put in a Monaco must-win away game against the best team in the Champions League, the group that we're in, it just feels like we've not really had a chance to pick ourselves up from every single punch we've had. And I mean, losing Toby and Kane is big enough, but to then have to go into this run of fixtures without them, one of them for all of them, Kane at 70% for probably at least two of them. That said, he's scoring again.
But I mean, and to follow up on what Rich just said, you know, we've just lost at Chelsea 2-1, narrow defeat to a team that will probably win the league, or at least the favourites to win the league at the moment. So
we hadn't conceded in 6 games, and we smashed one in 11 minutes.
Go on, boys!
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't drastic.
No,
was it?
It's not a disaster. And with Toby and Rose, who knows? Like we
know, with Lamella, we would have smashed him.
We'll do it with Lane.
100%.
Yeah, the rhetoric on Twitter as well is that we can't blame injuries because every team has injuries. But every team does have injuries, but they haven't so far.
Mm.
Like nobody's had the injuries to the extent of losing an Alderweireld and a Kane yet. And
Liverpool are only starting to get them now.
Exactly.
Lallana and Coutinho.
The same people saying you can't blame injuries, and the same people saying the only reason Spurs did well last year was because of injuries.
Yeah.
Because of no injuries.
Kind
of both ways.
Yeah, it's a very strange one. We've got, just to carry on with the Champions League before we move on, but we've got CSKA at home as a last game. We are third. We just need to avoid defeat to achieve, and I use that word very loosely, a Europa League place. It's going to be a weird one because there's already been a lot of talk about it's a sellout, and it's not going to look like it by any means. The players didn't seem to acknowledge the fans after the Monaco game, so Martin Cloak was kind of picking up reports and stuff about it, and he was tweeting about it, saying apparently nobody went over, or a very small handful of players went over. So they've not really done that much to make us want to fill Wembley, have they? So are you going, Rich? Have you got tickets? Did you get the package?
I have a ticket.
It's a very diplomatic answer.
I'm going to go. Purely because it's something to do on a Wednesday or Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to watch us play Russian teams at home
on the other side
of London.
Yeah, because the group's almost upside down. Like, the pot one team are at the bottom, the pot four C team are at the top. But yeah, I mean, you get to go and see CSKA Moscow play, so it's like, I'll go and see that. I've never seen them play before.
Absolutely. Yeah. And their goalkeeper apparently can't keep a clean sheet, so it'd be nice to watch history being made as well.
They've got good away fans as well.
Yeah.
Space to put your feet up and have a little lie down.
It's gonna be very odd, I think. But just on that Europa League thing, who knows, but it is likely that we're gonna make the Europa League. And it looks as if we are going to be playing Europa League at Wembley. Depends who you speak to, Sissoko or Pochettino at this rate. But Pochettino seems to have confirmed that we're going to be carrying on playing at Wembley. How do you feel about that? Liam, Chelsea
shouldn't
won
we
Europa
ask, first
League.
Of all, how do you feel about, do you want to be in the Europa League?
Yeah, go on.
Well, I'll open it to the floor.
No, I don't. I really don't. I really, really do not want to be in the Europa League again.
Okay.
It's
unequivocal.
Feels like we have been in the Europa League this season a bit.
It does.
You know, and I don't mean any. And Monaco are good, and I think you're right. They will give any team a really good game. But the fact is, we played them about 6 months before the first game. Before that, and it's a Europa League group, and I think we've approached it as such so far as well.
to spin that, we've kind of got the crap bit of the Europa League out of the way, and we'll be joining it up a good bit, so to speak. So there's going to be 16 to 32 decent European teams in there now. And we don't have to play a full squad. Like, we can play Onoma and all that lot.
But let's consider that they're going to have to sell tickets to these games. And the first time round, they could sell a package of three before a ball has even been kicked. You said it was a really good deal, and I still, you know, maintain that you don't go to watch a team win, you pay to watch your team play.
Yeah.
If they win, they win. But we have lost twice, which is annoying. But it's, they're going to have to look at that, and it doesn't matter who we get. If we get some mid-range, like, I don't know.
I couldn't tell you who's like.
No, I couldn't. I'm not going to even pretend. I'm not even going to try and make one up. But, you know, it's going to be much more difficult for us to sell this than we could. Arguably, we could get a really good team and sell less tickets for Europa League game, like for what would feel like a Champions League tie. Do you remember when we had Dortmund last year? Mm. They said it feels like a Champions League tie. And then we put out a youth team. But I don't know. I'm not. I don't want to be in Europa League. But yeah, Dan, you haven't answered this one yet.
I'm torn. I think this is where I feel conflicted. As a Tottenham supporter, I don't want Tottenham to be in the Europa League because I think it's unequivocally true that you do better in the Premier League if you're not in Europe. Yeah. And if Spurs want to get back in the Champions League, which they've now thrown, they've got to be out of the Europa League.
Yeah.
But actually, as a reporter, I quite like going on the away trips. It's quite fun.
I was
going
to say, are you still going to have to do it? So if we get Moldova,
I reckon it would depend. But as Rich says, most of those teams are already out, and you might get, I don't know, you might get Napoli or something.
Lovely.
It will mainly be decent teams.
Yeah,
at that
mainly
stage.
Be decent teams. Might be some good little trips.
Yeah. Quite a few. As long as you catch your flight, you'll be bankrupt by the end of the season. Lynn, Chelsea have won the Europa League before as well.
By dropping into it as well, right?
Yeah. After your Champions League win, wasn't it? Yeah. Was it the season
they
after?
Were the only,
it was Benitez.
Yeah, they were the only team to hold the Champions League and the Europa League at the same time for about a week.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That
which they didn't remind anyone of. They fell into the Europa League and then they fell into winning the Europa League because there was no desire aside from Rafa Benitez, who came in November. And when you know, part of the thing about the interim manager model is they want to come in and line their own CV with trophies, so they try in the cups, so the league campaign's already lost. So he put out his best teams in the FA Cup, Europa League, and they also got a horrendously weak draw, like at every single stage. I think they had Steaua Bucharest, with Basel in the semi-finals, which Basel are a decent team, but they're not a semi-final team. And then they only really tried in the final against Benfica because...
Who are cursed as well in finals.
Yeah,
so.
Because then they could see a trophy. Yeah. You know, and it was a chance to save the season. I was being told, off the record, in no uncertain terms last year, that Chelsea were not trying for the Europa League. It's debatable whether they would have been good enough anyway to achieve that standard of getting 6th to 8th or whatever, but they just decided that drawing every game under Gus Hiddink was fair enough. I mean, there's a slightly different situation now because the Europa League carries Champions League place,
yeah,
which it didn't then.
But the work you have to put into it is...
It's a long road.
Considering you've got a league season...
You have to choose. If you're in with a fight for 4th, especially as Pochettino's more or less come out and said, our squad isn't good enough to compete on 2 fronts. That's what he said. So if Spurs are in with a shout of 4th, which you think they probably will be in a few months, I don't think they're going to get beaten too many more times, then you've got to do what you did last year and play Tom Carroll and whoever it was, Harry Winks against whoever we face.
Yeah.
I think it's a gamble either way, because if you're gambling on finishing top 4 in the league, two good teams and 2 very big clubs are going to miss out this year, whatever happens. And if you're gambling
on one good team and one big club.
Well, yeah. And if you're gambling on winning the Europa League, that's probably even more of a shot in the dark.
I do feel AVB was a bit unlucky with this because he went for the Europa League and it was all about like installing this winning mentality and stuff and playing Champions League level games. But he backed himself into a corner because we were winning games because of Gareth Bale in the league and we just kept clinging on to 4th. But we kept getting through the Europa League because we were kind of focusing on it. And then we got to this point in about March, did we go out? It was Basel, wasn't it, on penalties. Mm. and we kind of dropped out.
They injured Bale.
I think they injured Bale, but also we had like a two legs against Inter that went to extra time, which never should have. And we lost to Fulham straight after because our legs were just shot. And it was like we're failing this balancing act, and it is the same every season for us. And United are finding out now. Mm. There's if you're not mentally wanting to be there, let alone kind of physically, and it does drain you. And then you realise you've got to play Sunday. If that game on Thursday had been the FA Cup for United, they were at home. There's no reason why they should be knackered, really. If that was an FA Cup game and then they played on Sunday, nobody would be blaming the FA Cup for them failing to beat West Ham on the Sunday. The Europa League has a mental aspect, which I think we slightly overcame last season, but to no avail, apparently. Speaking of to no avail, we had a good first half against Chelsea. And like you say, we had Eriksen, we were one up through Eriksen. I chose to miss this game, which makes me an awful Spurs fan and podcast host.
Not impressed.
Sorry, mate. I went to the cinema instead.
What's wrong with you?
I can't deal with these games. Podcast. I just couldn't do
you
it.
You present
for this
the
game.
Spurs podcast.
I know. I present. I'm asking you for your views.
What did you watch?
I watched Arrival.
Nice.
That's crap as well.
It was a bit rubbish.
You see, I missed the Monaco game for Fantastic Beasts. So
bit of a theme going on here, guys. Have you ever missed a Chelsea game for a cinema trip?
Not for a cinema trip. I probably would have missed a few last year were I not covering them.
Yeah, yeah.
There were probably about half the season wasn't appointment viewing. So
yeah, pick your battles, I think. Yeah, Dan, you can't tell me you've never missed a game.
I can, because I haven't. I've never gone to the cinema. I've missed one when it's unavoidable, when I've been at an event.
I bought tickets not realising what time the game was. That's unavoidable.
Yeah, alright.
But I was starting to regret it a little bit, because I was like, if we win here for the first... Because I was on WhatsApp just before the film started and saw everyone going a bit crazy that Eriksen scored. I was like, right, I won't look until I know the game's over, because it's just going to torture me. And I just thought, if this is the first time in like 27 years that we win and I've gone to the cinema instead of watching it, I won't be very happy.
You would never be allowed to watch Spurs again.
No, and rightly so as well, rightly so. But apparently it was an improved first half. Eriksen put us one up. I've seen the highlights since. We just switched off, didn't we, for one moment. And Dan, you've already said about how Chelsea are the favourites for the league title this season. Can't do that, can you? And Pedro, is it Pedro who scored the equaliser?
It was.
We just gave him about 10 yards and...
Yeah, it's a good finish.
Stuck it in right in the bit where you couldn't get it. But how did you feel about the game overall?
How did I feel? It was an improved first half. I thought there was a horrible sense of inevitability as soon as Pedro scored that it was supposed to be going to lose the game. But... Yeah, I think, as I said before, the Arsenal game, actually, sometimes when you're low in confidence and you're coming off a really bad run, it's quite useful to play a team that you really hate and you really don't want to lose to and who are a rival, because it means regardless, everyone lifts their performance. And you could see that in the first half. You could see that Spurs were playing better than they had done in the last few weeks. But I think as soon as that goal went in, then... The fact that they were on a bad run and struggling for goals, and that was the problem really in the first half and the second half. For all Spurs possession, there's still no cutting edge.
It was a speculative goal as well from Eriksen, considering the form he's on as well. That goes out the stadium in any other game he's played this season. Rich, how did you feel?
Overall, I thought I was impressed. I thought we were brilliant for a combined hour probably across the whole game, but that goal just before half time, the timing of it was horrendous. It was probably we'd have probably been better off if they had scored like 2 minutes after Eriksen's, but it was just right before half time. Everyone just sunk and thought if we could have just held out for that extra minute and got into half time, we could refresh, reset. It was an absolute sucker punch. But on the whole, I thought we pushed an incredible Chelsea team. Like, they are incredible with star quality everywhere, we pushed them really far and had the better of it for a lot of the game.
Yeah. It's the first goal they've conceded in 7 games?
Yeah.
It was the 7th game. So, yeah. I mean, that kind of, does that tell its own story, Liam, do you think? Or?
Yeah, I think, well, we kind of anticipated that Spurs would be the biggest test that they've had on, that Chelsea have had on this winning run. And they certainly, they, the way even they set up, asked different questions, because United came to Stamford Bridge and, all right, you can only read so much into it because they conceded in 30 seconds, but they played very passively. Spurs were marking each of the centre-backs from every goal kick, not giving Chelsea an easy out to play out of defence. They were, they had the man advantage in midfield over Kante and Matic, and they were using it. And it was the most disrupted that Chelsea system has looked since the switch to 3-4-3.
Mm.
But the problem was, it takes a phenomenal amount of effort, physical and in terms of technical, to coordinate that pressing is really hard. And they did it brilliantly for half an hour. But I always had my doubts as to whether Tottenham could sustain that for 90 minutes. And Gary Cahill said that after the game, that Chelsea were always confident.
Mm.
Spurs would dip energy-wise after a while. And I felt that after about 30, 35 minutes, Chelsea were starting to get to grips with it, beat the press. That's where the first goal came from. Played around the press, around the right-back area. Worked it into Matic to Pedro, who'd, I mean, he'd got in between the lines for the first time. And it was a great goal.
Mm.
Two speculative goals, really. I don't think either team created a super clear chance in the first half. Chelsea were lucky to be level when they did. But then I felt from that point in the second half, Chelsea kind of had it, not under total control, but under kind of under control.
Reasonably comfortable, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the second goal is just what we've seen in recent weeks, which is, whenever Chelsea have the ball on one side of the pitch, Alonso or Moses are in a laughable amount of space, like, because of the men over situations.
Does help when all of your defenders are on one side of the box, as Spurs were, though.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the replay of that goal, Wimmer is in a position to deal with Moses, but he has to get sucked in to track Pedro. And really, it's then Son's job to track Moses 70 yards.
Right.
Which, yeah, but I mean, there aren't many left wingers that you're going to expect to do that.
Yeah.
And that's the question that this system asks of teams, and so far no one's really found an answer.
In the because in the build-up to Moses' goal, Vertonghen physically calls to Wimmer, points at, must have been Pedro in the middle, saying, he's yours, I'm going to fill in this space, he's yours, come in, because Moses was at the halfway line at that point.
It's also a fantastic vision from Diego Costa as well, to see him.
Yeah.
Because he you know, it would have been so easy just to hammer that into an area, but he sees Moses arriving from the other side.
Just a general point on Spurs' bad form. One of the things that was striking in Monaco, and I was speaking to Tom Olner, and I were speaking about this afterwards, after the game, was that that Spurs system, as Pochettino's system, as we know, relies on playing the ball out from the back, as does Chelsea's at the moment. It's a key facet of it. And against Monaco, and in fact in almost every game since Alderweireld, you end up with a lot of very bad players on the ball for a hell of a long time. Against Monaco, I think about 60% of Spurs' touches came from Lloris, Wimmer, Wanyama, and who else plays centre? And Dyer. So those four players, and none of them are good footballers. And they're not players you want on the ball. And obviously that's very different when Alderweireld and Vertonghen in there, because they could both feasibly play in midfield. They're really good on the ball. And you can see with Chelsea, they've got three guys at the back, maybe Gary Cahill less so, but certainly David Luiz.
He's fantastic on the ball.
He's just a brilliant passer.
Yeah.
And Azpilicueta can play as well. And they've got guys who just look so comfortable playing that system. And it's, I suppose, it, really what it comes back to is just, please get fit, Toby.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It does feel like so. The longer this goes on,
how much longer is it for him?
He should be back for Swansea, but then Pochettino's literally been saying that since the Leicester game, which is about a month ago.
Yeah, I thought he was. It was a chance for Leicester, to the point where I was like, he's back for Arsenal and West Ham and Chelsea, and every single time it gets to Friday, and that Spurs official tweet goes out and says, no, there will be no Alderweireld, or he's not ready yet. And it's immediately just so depleting to see it.
you wouldn't think a centre-back can make that much difference. He does.
He's just more than a centre-back, isn't he? As we now know, he is the first line of Tottenham's creativity. And among in the top three most creative players in the team, just because of the way he plays the ball.
And keeps it. Let's say, are you comfortable? There's comfort when Toby has the ball at the back.
Gives confidence to the other defenders.
Absolutely don't have it at the moment. So I guess that's a mentality thing as well. Do you think you've put in the running order about it being a mentality issue? Do you really think that's the case? You said our rivals, but you look at something like Arsenal, where we used to routinely go and get smashed, even under Redknapp, when Yole, and when the tide started to turn a little bit, we'd still go there and lose 3-0 easily. That's completely changed. You know, we go there and we dominate. We've dominated two out of the three games that we've been there, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't know why I put that in the running order, actually. Fair enough. I think it's because of that, of what I said, that feeling of sort of inevitability. Yeah, it
felt very 90s.
Yeah,
We used to go one up at Old Trafford.
In fact, it did feel like Stamford quite a 90s Bridge.
It did, absolutely. Yeah. It was injuries all over the place. We went 1-0 up. There was that bit of hope, and then we lack concentration for a minute before half time, and you just know, and for 15 minutes, you know that team, doesn't matter what's said in that team talk, does not matter. They'll come out. And we will lose. We will lose at some point. So, and it was a little bit tame, you said as well. Not quite so many yellow cards as last time. Just trying to think back to that podcast that we did, and we were talking about all the tackles. Mm. It just seems like a world ago, because we haven't seen that this season from a Pochettino Spurs at all. Were you surprised? Because we had a chat, myself and the two guys that were on last week, were having a chat about whether we thought this was revenge is probably a bit too strong of a word, but we expected the same sort of intensity from both teams.
Yeah.
Were you watching the whole game expecting just that first tackle to fly in and someone to cartwheel over?
Well, I remember last time I was on, I said that Mark Clattenburg spent 90 minutes playing advantage. And I was expecting maybe not quite the same level, just because the stakes weren't quite as high. Mm. But it's still a London derby. You've still got two combative, really high-pressing teams. But what surprised me was that it wasn't an emotional game at all. It was a tactical game. Mm. And the things that turned were purely tactical things or individual mistakes. It wasn't about players losing their cool. Mm. I don't know whether you can put that down to being passive or whether it's just that both teams approached it from a calm-headed point of view. They both had game plans to win the game, and I think Chelsea's won out purely because they're on a crest of a wave confidence-wise, and they're at full strength. Mm. Tottenham aren't.
Yeah, they didn't need to make it that sort of game, I guess, did they? No. I suppose we had no Rose and no Lamela, who are usually kind of the first ones to cause something.
Well, it was Rose and Willian last time squaring up.
Well, it was. Poch got onto the pitch, and then Lamella did the no-look stamp. Dan
does everything with flair.
It does, yeah. We were missing Moussa Sissoko on every week. He was out of the squad completely. So Pochettino has quite categorically come out and said he's not doing enough to get into the squad at the moment. What he actually said was, and you can read this on Dan Kilpatrick's ESPN article, you sign a player.
Hold on, I wasn't there.
What?
As in, these quotes weren't said to me.
But you've written it up.
I've rewritten it, yeah.
You've rewritten it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And that's all we can ask.
Okay.
You sign a player and then you expect something and you don't find what you expected. If another deserved to be involved, like maybe Nkudu or Josh Onoma or Janssen, why not? Just because we pay money for someone, do they deserve to play? Sissoko, so he's actually named him explicitly as well. Sissoko needs to work hard and show in future that he deserves to be in the team. This is a guy that's been there for about 10 weeks, I think. And Pochettino has thrown him under the bus there. Like, there's no excuses for the game because he's not taken part. But Sissoko's last game for us was, because he's been suspended as well, hasn't he? He was suspended after the Bournemouth game, so I don't think he's played since.
Was it Wembley at home?
Leverkusen.
He played in Monaco for about 10 minutes.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, came on.
Massive impact. Yeah, okay. Well, he's played 10 minutes of that game and he came and he played against Leverkusen as well, didn't he? Mm. And usually he will, if you look at, say, for instance, Janssen, who is having a stinker of a season at the moment, but he's still working hard. Pochettino hasn't said a single thing about him. And considering he's had quite a few minutes and quite a few ineffectual minutes as well, Janssen. Sissoko's had like a month less on the training pitch, hardly nowhere near as many minutes as Janssen. And he's name checked him there in that, saying he is not doing anywhere near enough to get into this team. Are we going to see him again? Because Poch's shit list is that, a shit list.
It's worth saying that this is really unusual for Pochettino. Mm. He doesn't. First of all, he really doesn't like his selection being questioned at all, and he's actually flown off the handle. Well, he's lost his cool before when notably when he was asked about Wimmer and Leverkusen, and he went on a bit of a rant. He was also asked about Dembele not starting the first Monaco game at Wembley, and he went on a bit of a rant. Mm. So he doesn't like his selection being questioned. So I can only imagine that someone said to him, "Why was Sissoko not on the bench today?" And
which is a perfectly valid question, to straight back.
But yeah, he would normally, if it was any other player, let's say, I don't know who else was off the bench, but if it was any other player, he would normally say something along the lines of, "I've only got 18 picks, there's nothing to read into it," something like that, and probably be a bit irritable about having been asked. So the very fact that he's given an explanation, name checks Sissoko, and been critical is surprising. And I just read Jack Pitbrook's article of The Independent. He said the last time Pochettino criticised a player publicly was Townsend, which I'm sure is true, because I can't think of anyone else.
He didn't even criticise Bentaleb, did he, really? Or Wimmer, no. Who clearly were and are on the shit list.
Yeah, he doesn't tend to do it. And obviously Townsend did not play again.
So this is going to be interesting, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and...
Do you think?
It sounds mad, but
yeah, it really, this really
I wouldn't
could be
surprised
it.
If we didn't see Sissoko for a while.
Would you be bothered, Rich, if we didn't see Sissoko, or are you not that fussed? Does the money concern you as well?
The money doesn't concern me at all. I think that's today's money, and if he doesn't work out at 30 million, we'll probably get 20 million off him from PSG or something like that. Like. And if we've lost 10 million on a gamble like that, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think there's a wider issue for me around short-termism of expectations on these players. Like, you've got Nkudu, Janssen, both really young, coming from different leagues, different countries, literally uprooting their lives, dropping themselves in a foreign country, foreign city, completely new to them. I think it's ridiculous to expect so much from them so soon. I think it's taken Son a year to actually...
Lamella it took two, at least.
These are young... I don't want to say fragile, but like there's a lot going on for them.
Mm.
Sissoko, I haven't got quite as much patience with him because he's a Premier League player. He knows what to expect from Premier
League. Let's face it, he's got form. Yeah. He has got form for this. Like, we can't ignore the fact that he did literally just stop... at Newcastle for huge lengths of time until it suited him.
But at the same time, like you say, 10 weeks ago he was preparing for a season with Newcastle in the Championship, and now he's suddenly expected to be a Champions League player at Tottenham Hotspur in London.
He wasn't preparing.
Well,
yeah, he's very much, he's been quite vocal in what he thinks he is a Champions League player.
Mm.
Do you not think that we should be expected, again, Liam, from a neutral point of view, if somebody said, you know, I'm a Champions League player, I think I should be there every single week, you know, playing at top level, and then Chelsea went and bought them for however much money, and then they turned up and just, it didn't even look like they were capable of playing sort of the level of football that they've come from, let alone what they've aspired to and got to. I mean, what would you feel?
Yeah.
Is it a case of patience with him? Are we expecting too much, or...?
I don't necessarily think patience. What Pochettino seems to be alluding to is just the lack of application on the training pitch.
Mm.
which is not something you should need patience for. That should be day one. All footballers, in order to make it to the top, they have to have a certain level of ego. They have to know on some level how good they are. But there's a mentality that goes with players that succeed at the very top level. And we've seen that in flashes from Sissoko. I remember one game he played against Chelsea. I think it might have been his Premier League debut.
Yeah.
And he looked absolutely sensational in that game. And he's a force of nature when he's on it. But I think he had already got to the stage at Newcastle where if you're Tottenham signing him for 30 million, you're gambling that the situation rather than the personality was the problem. Because Newcastle was a basket case anyway. There were tons of mitigating factors why he might have switched off. But there are no such excuses at Tottenham. It's a well-run club. It's a competitive young squad. It should be exactly the stage that he wanted, that he's been looking for all these years. And
in
if he's
that
not
case,
trying...
Is Pochettino then just looking at the situation as it is now and taking all of that into account and thinking, you know what, maybe the best thing for him is to kind of publicly just hang him out and say, like, this is what you wanted... Let's see it. And if it's not getting through to him, if it's not a natural thing to Sissoko, which does seem bonkers to us, but if it isn't a natural thing to him, but he has got the ability to do it, it's just a drastic way of trying to get something out of him. Who knows? Sissoko could be on training field today, belting it. You never know.
Well, it's like Dan said, the fact that Pochettino really doesn't have form for this kind of thing makes it even more powerful when he does, and he's clearly made a calculated decision that this is the way to go with Sissoko. But the interesting thing now is whether he's done it in a I'm washing my hands of this sense, or whether he's done it as a genuine challenge.
I think it'll be the latter. I mean, I was half joking when I said we might not see him again. I think the price tag is a factor. It just has to be a factor, because Levy won't want to write off the £30 million asset. And Pochettino will be aware that, in much the same way that there was a lot of talk when Pochettino came in about him getting the best out of Lamela, his fellow Argentinian, that was a factor, apparently, behind hiring Pochettino, the fact that Lamela had cost so much money and been so poor.
No, I'm not surprised.
Obviously, things have changed, and £30 million is a bit more commonplace now than it was then. But still, I think... Pochettino will be aware that this is not a player he can just wash his hands with, as much as he might like, or at least he can't wash his hands with him just yet. I suppose we've got to try and get the best out of him over the next few months.
Well, especially because 30 million's more to Tottenham than it would be to maybe some of the other big clubs.
We also can't diminish his value by if he doesn't play for the next 2 months and has a bit of a vimmer, he's a 6-monther, just don't see him, never expect to see him again, and then our hands are forced where he has to play, then he's not going to look up to much, but at all, is he? So you're saying getting 20 million back, we probably wouldn't see that. If we're that desperate to get rid, people would say, all right, then give you 12, try your hand. Why not?
Relying on another club making the same gamble on talent over attitude that we can fix him.
I wonder if he's one of these players who almost has to have the team built around him. Like, he needs to be told, okay, you're the guy. These guys are going to help you play. And maybe he's one of those kind of players, but I don't see that happening under a Poch team.
Don't even know how good a team built around Sissoko would be. He's good, he's not that good.
That asks more questions than it answers, definitely. So Sissoko was part of a summer recruitment that also saw Janssen, as we said, Nkudu, Wanyama, and Paul Lopez as well, the enigmatic Paul Lopez. So it was I think we're starting to see now, we weren't sure about how good the summer had been when we first started this season, but on paper, Janssen and Wanyama looked like good first team ready signings. Janssen was clearly a backup. He's played way more minutes than he expected to by this stage, and we've said it a few times on this pod, so it is difficult to judge him. But we are starting to see it now where the backups to the players that we have got had out injured, unlucky as it has been, aren't good enough quite yet. In terms of our recruitment, Dan, do you think that there's an ongoing problem? And if there is, what is the problem? Is it Pochettino? Is it Paul Mitchell going? Is it Levy? I mean, we all know that Levy is part of the problem, as he always will be. But you know, where do you see the blame lying for, let's say, a Sissoko for 30 million?
I don't know, because it's always difficult to know what's going on behind the scenes at Tottenham. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and you never really know who's in charge.
Mm.
And the Mitchell thing muddied the waters even more, I think. So, at the beginning of the summer, I would have assumed that it was the transfer committee that Spurs had in place, which was Mitchell, Levy, Pochettino, David Pleat, and...
McKenzie, was it?
No, Broomfield.
Okay.
And McKenzie was an assistant to Mitchell.
Right.
He left at the same time as him. So, I think it was a wisdom by crowds approach of like the five of them working together. But now Mitchell's resigned and Pochettino's job title changed, even though he played that down. Quite hard to know who's calling the shots now.
Sissoko was signed after Mitchell was announced.
Yeah,
as well,
so the beginning
it?
Of the summer, I think we can say with some confidence that Janssen and Wanyama were Mitchell Pochettino signings, and that's obvious in the case of Wanyama because they worked together at Southampton.
Hmm.
I think Liam might be able to add something to this, but Spurs were quite keen on Batshuayi. And when that didn't happen, or when Levy refused to go for him, that's when the rift happened and Mitchell decided he had enough.
On Sissoko...
So that's a bit of background, and what I would say is that I don't know.
But I mean, yeah. We can take an educated guess, though. The Sissoko deal, Pochettino, he attributed us signing here, and for such a large fee, to us needing that type of player. I think the exact quote was, we need the type of player, the type that can break the lines or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, was it, yeah.
And he was very... It felt a bit PR, that line, because people weren't sure on Sissoko, and there must have been behind the scenes, Spurs must have been thinking, well, we've by no means got the real deal here. But there was talk of Mane as well in the summer, which
yeah,
was
he wanted to sign Mane.
£4 million, £5 million more than what the Sissoko deals were.
Well, it was more or less the same, I think. But Mane's on 130,000 a week.
Yeah, that's a major difference. Yeah. But still, we had a target, and we were left with quite clearly a second or third choice. How do you see Levy's role in this, Rich? Do you? Because you know what, the things that are pointed at Levy, I always feel like are the wrong things. So the tight, I don't think he's tight. I think he runs a club within its means.
Yeah.
We are not a club that can pay 120, 130 grand to a Mane who's coming from Southampton. We can't do it. We don't know. We'd need Messi to be joining us for us to break that 100 million.
We should go for him.
Do that.
Yeah, I think that's what we need.
He's not. that's it. That missing ingredient.
Guys, who cracked it.
Yeah, I think Pochettino should. Yeah,
we've got mini Messi, guys.
Of course. True. Yeah, that's actually the only good thing that might come out of this season is that Edwards' progress might be accelerated. But sorry, yeah. How do you see Levy as in regards to our recruitment?
I think he only does what he thinks is best, if that makes sense. It doesn't always work, but he's never won. It always feels like he's given what he thinks he can give with regards to players and who he's bringing in. I don't think he brings in players just for the sake of bringing someone in just to fill up some numbers. Like, there's always an intent, but I'm pro Levy in inverted commas, so I would feel that.
Does feel like this is his blind spot, though, doesn't it? Transfers. Everything else he does with the club is,
oh yeah,
perfect, pretty much. He's an ideal chairman until it comes to that recruitment. We've seen rifts before over it. Apparently AVB, Redknapp always used to kind of unsubtly in the media come out with these things.
I think actually the Sissoko signing is the evidence of sort of the opposite of that. I think it's probably true that Pochettino wanted a different type of player because after the first few games, the Everton game, the Palace game, did have a problem creating chances, which they still got, but I think Pochettino felt he needed a more direct type of player. And I think he felt that Sissoko, as Liam says, it was a gamble, but could possibly be that man. And then it's a sign of Levy's trust in Pochettino that he backed him to the tune of 30 million quid.
I don't think it's
a reason to be worried about Levy. I think the wider issue here is that Pochettino is talking... I mean, Wanyama was a no-brainer. His contract was running down. He worked with Pochettino. He's Premier League proven. He's Champions League proven. had a really good campaign in the Champions League with Celtic. So he was a no-brainer, and he's been a really good signing. The issue is, Sissoko was a gamble, as we've discussed, and Janssen and Kudu are clearly, in Pochettino's mind, young players for the future.
Mm.
And if you're a team looking at a title challenge, as Spurs were in August, and looking at a first campaign in the Champions League for 5 years, you need to sign better players than a gamble and two young players and one banker.
Yeah.
And especially when a decent number of squad players who you think could have done a job in the last few weeks, like Chadli, Benteleb, and Mason, have all been sold for quite big money. Mm. It needed to be better. And hindsight's a great thing, but that's the truth.
Are Schalke in the Champions League?
No.
But they are probably in the Europa League. Good level. So Benteleb's playing
Europe. Could play them in the Europa League.
Okay. But Benteleb, I'd say, is probably at a very good club. Chadli's played Champions League before. We have got rid of those two
we've got great prices for them. So fair. you can see why the deals make complete sense in isolation, but when Pochettino is asked about Janssen, maybe it's a deflection tactic, or he's trying to alleviate the pressure, but he always just says, oh, he's a young player, he's 22, he's come from a foreign league, which is what Rich said, and it's completely true. But you have to think, well, was that the answer for Spurs?
Fair enough.
I was going to say, I know it's a bit captain hindsight, but if you could give me Chadli or Sissoko right now, I'd take Chadli every time.
I don't think you need hindsight. And I'm not joking there. Yeah. I mean, I was never Chadli's biggest fan, but I saw the merits in keeping him.
Always scored goals.
Always did. And he would have scored in...
Which people were using as a stick to beat him with. Yeah. Like, all he did was score goals. Yeah.
He only does
awful trait.
He only does the basic essence of the sport he plays. What a bastard. All he does is win trophies.
Destroyed Chelsea in that 5-3 as well. That was Chadli's finest performance.
Yeah.
Peak Chadli.
It was peak Chadli, yeah. Nothing else quite hit the heights after that. So Liam, from the outside, because Chelsea don't deal with, he's one of the many clubs now that no longer deals with Daniel Levy. Do you respect that in a way? Like, considering the sort of club that we are, we, in a weird way, from a boardroom level, we're that tough to beat, I suppose, in a football sense. You know, make yourself tough to beat. If you're going to lose, you're going to have to work really hard. If you're going to sign a player, you're going to have to pay a lot of money and work really hard to get it, and I'll make it as difficult as possible.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about someone like Levy on the other side?
On the whole, I've got a lot of admiration for the way he's run Tottenham on and off the pitch. He has his flaws. I think his one flaw when it comes to the transfer market is maybe his determination to win the deal rather than simply do the deal occasionally gets the better of him. But I think on the whole, he does exceptionally well. He's not been superb at picking managers, but I don't think anyone is. I think it's not an exact science.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem I think Spurs have in the transfer market is not primarily down to Levy or managers or sporting directors or anything. It's simply their position in the market, where if you're not shopping in the very top bracket, which they can't, then you're not going to get players that tick all the boxes. You're either going to get guys like Nkudu or Janssen, who maybe one day could be something special, but they're not right now. And you're gambling that they are. Some will hit, some will miss. Nkudu looks quite promising, I think, in what I've seen of him. Or you're getting players who maybe have a lower talent ceiling, but are more ready right now. I don't think you're necessarily getting world-class, ready players. Right.
We've always been the same.
Liverpool had the same problem for many years. And it leads to... Transfers are always hit and miss, but leads to maybe even more hit and miss.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very true.
It's fair. Should we do a listener question? We'll do one because we are running quite low on time.
Right.
We'll do bankrupts one. In memory of Sissoko, what Spurs signings were you convinced would be disastrous, and did they turn out not to be? That's a really good question, and what I've done in preparation for this is, if you look at the back of your running orders, guys, you will see our top 10 highest transfer fees paid. So going from 10 to 1.
God.
Yeah, it's from 10 to 1. We'll go. I'm going to read out the name, and then you can tell me whether you think it was a success or a failure. Jermaine Defoe.
Success. Portsmouth one.
The second time?
Yeah.
Success.
Yeah. Success.
Yeah. Score goals.
How much did they sell him on for? Do you know?
Sell him on for? Yeah. Well, after.
After the Portsmouth.
He went to Toronto.
It was
about 3 million.
Not much.
No, it was quite. I thought it was quite a lot.
Yeah.
It was. He's right. It was about 9 or 10.
Tottenham always get value for sales. Yeah. I'd say a success.
Yep. Moussa Dembélé.
His stats were more or less the same as in his first period, which you.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Not well. He had one really good season for us. Speaking of which, Moussa Dembélé.
That's
sorry.
Difficult.
Sorry. I think success purely for how good he can be and how good he was last season.
Yeah, success.
I'd say success.
Darren Bent. Fail.
That pre-season, though.
That pre-season. That four, was it five against Norwich or something like that?
He got 8-4 or something like that.
You know what? I've got a huge soft spot for Darren Bent.
We never played his football, did we?
The thing is, we were just saying about Chadley. He had a season and a half? Scored loads of goals.
Yeah.
Harry Redknapp never started him. He always came off the bench and scored goals.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, he's total shit.
To be fair, we had four strikers at that time as well. That was Keane, Berbatov, Defoe and Bent.
It's quite silly,
which is
it?
Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. I mean, that was the seasons where we'd score 65 and didn't concede 63.
Okay, so 16.5 mil here. Didn't we sell him to Sunderland for 18?
Yeah.
Or
Villa?
I'm going Villa.
They sold him to Sunderland.
I think they sold in Sunderland for slightly less, and then Villa went mental and bought him for 24.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah, Luka Modric, obviously.
Yeah.
Number six. I'm not saying his name. Someone else. Say
something.
Small Paul.
The biggest failure we've ever had at Tottenham Hotspur. Vincent Janssen, 17 million. I mean, he's number five. That is crazy, isn't it?
It's just
too early.
Transfer market's inflationary, so.
Yeah, I guess.
You can see the date column here is going up and up as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Son?
I mean, why didn't you adjust these for inflation, mate?
Sorry. I did this as I was leaving work today. Son?
Ooh, failure.
Really?
So far. He's not been a 22 million player so far, has he?
Yeah.
He's got plenty of time to turn it around, though.
Yeah. I mean, and his ability as well. He's a good player. Soldado?
Failure.
Yeah. Moussa Sissoko? Number two.
It's not looking good.
And Lamella?
Roaring success.
Yeah, I was going to say, Danny's your favourite player, so I think you can say he's probably a success. You'd say success as well, wouldn't you, Rich?
Yeah.
The fact that he's still here, nearly 4 years later as well, despite what he has gone through with, you know, AVB, there was just no point in that even happening at the time.
When you said almost 4 years, I had to double check that. I was like, has he?
Yeah. Sherwood and then Pochettino's had him. This is season three, so.
I had a conversation with a few other journalists recently, all people that know their football really, really well, and a couple of them were saying he's Tottenham's most important player.
Lamella?
Yeah. And I was like, don't disagree with that. These are like, aren't guys who work for the Nationals, they don't do Spurs all the time. Like, whenever we watch Spurs, he's the most important player. And you can see in this run.
Did they say that they'd vote for him as player of the year?
They didn't go that far.
He's got such a silly haircut.
How
can he possibly be of any use to a football team?
Bit of a girly face.
I know. I can't believe that he's that good. Shocker.
Failure.
You going for failure?
No.
All right. I was going to say, you of all people say that he's a failure.